they're both really good in that, I think. And even like Arturo and the other dude. Mm-hmm.
The jerk off guy.
Yeah, the jerk off guy. Yeah. Yeah.
Open I just your shirt.
No.
That's so
spit
weird.
On it.
That's so, so uncomfortable. What's up? This is Movies on Up. I'm free. All that useless pain is gone. And I don't mean to say that Dave is not seated across from me, because he is. He
still
is not,
here. Yeah, not going anywhere. It's my house.
He is not useless pain. That's Mr. Dave. I am Ryan. We are Movies on Up. I'm free. All that useless pain is gone is our tagline for this week. If you think you know what movie that comes from, you can send your guest to us in one of the following ways. You can email us, moviesonup@gmail.com. You can leave your guest on our Facebook page, facebook.com/moviesonup. Or you can tweet your guest to us @moviesonup on the Twitter if you are correct. And if we choose you, we will be free to send you a prize package that will be delivered to your home. This week, being delivered to the theaters is The Goldfinch, starring Baby Driver, a hell of a lot of people, not the least of which is Nicole Kidman, which got us to thinking about, do we want to do a Nicole Kidman list? Which
would be fun,
yeah.
But we just did Jay Chaz last week.
Right, so we didn't want to go with two actress lists back to back. It'd been a while since we did a movie episode, so it just so happens that Karen Kusama's Destroyer from 2018 is now on Hulu. So if you're a subscriber, you can watch that for free. Or it's on Prime for $3.99.
It's worth it.
It is absolutely worth it. It's a movie that we were both very high on last year when we did our fall preview, which we're just really a couple weeks away from doing for this year. We tend to try and identify movies that we think we're excited about seeing or may do well come Oscar time. Kusama was a director that we were high on from her last movie, The Invitation, which got its own episode. So the fact that she was doing another one, we're excited about it. Dave kind of read a little bit about the plot and thought that this is certainly going to be an Oscar movie. So the fact that it's now streaming in a couple platforms, we really wanted to kind of take the time to talk about it because we didn't talk about it. Neither of us had seen it.
It came out late. It came out. It was one of those that
came out December 28th.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was one that we were both excited for, but by the time we did our year-end list, it was one of, I believe we both mentioned, like, I assume it'll be up there, but we haven't seen it yet. And it would have been up there. It definitely would have been up there for me.
Yeah, they didn't make it easy for us. It came out in almost as limited a release as you could get. Three theaters, to be exact, on December 28th, 2018. Obviously on three screens, did not crack the top five. Your top five that week were Aquaman, Mary Poppins Returns, Bumblebee, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, and The Mule. That was the top five. Destroyer opened to $55,000 total, but did have a really good per-screen average.
What, 17 per screen?
It's about 18.5 per screen, which was good for second. Behind Felicity Jones is On the Basis of Sex, which made 686,000 on 33 screens, so it had almost 21,000 per screen. It went on to gross $1.5 million domestically, which puts it in 7,309th place on the all-time list, right below a 2007 Academy Award nominated Danish movie starring Mads Mikkelsen.
The wedding or what?
Yes.
After the Wedding. Yeah.
Yes, which just got remade earlier this month. It's called After the Wedding, and one spot above a film called Deli Belly, which I know nothing about. For what it's worth, 2016's Jane Got a Gun, featuring the cast of the prequel Star Wars movies, finished 20 spots lower with just about 1.5 domestic as well.
This is what makes me mad, though. I'm going to rant.
There's going to be a couple rants.
Why?
Week, go ahead.
Like, why wasn't this movie pumped and released? Why? You look at that top four. It's the typical holiday fare. You have Bumblebee.
Yep.
You have Spider-Man, Aquaman, which she's in. Nicole Kidman is in this movie that's making a lot of money. And you have all these that are relatively family-ish movies.
And then you have The Mule.
And The Mule.
Right.
Which, I think audience-wise, is the same audience.
Yes,
I think
that's the
same people. The counter-programming people. You can go see it, Clint Eastwood trying to have threesomes. Or Nicole Kidman just destroying and giving Nicole
no
Kidman.
Pun intended.
Oh yeah, I guess it pun not even realized. Like Nicole Kidman, who's had this amazing career, is this fantastic actress giving probably the best performance of her career. Academy Award winner Nicole Kidman giving the best performance of her career. Nicole Kidman starring in the movie that is number one at the box office that week, who has another movie coming out in a couple of weeks after that with Kevin Hart and Bryan Cranston. This was prime Nicole Kidman season. This was prime Oscar season. Why was Destroyer just shoved under the rug? You have Sebastian Stan, who's in the Marvel movies, who was just in Infinity War, you know, a few months prior. You have Toby Kebbell. I don't get it. I don't understand how a studio looks at this movie and thinks, three theaters is enough.
All right. So I don't know this for a fact. I mean, I know parts of this as fact because it's a fact. The studio behind Destroyer was Annapurna. They were going out of business, and they had Vice that had come out the same week as Destroyer. When we're talking
that
about
their Oscar buzz movie.
That was it. Incredibly limited resources. Annapurna in theaters that week. They had Vice, If Beale Street Could Talk, and Destroyer. Beale Street was one that was getting some Oscar buzz, and Vice was the one that they were really pinning their hopes on. So I think Destroyer, just by virtue of ending up with the studio that was distributing that movie, I think it was just low on their priority list, which is unfortunate because it deserved a better fate than what it got. So having that scarcity of resources and putting it behind basically every other movie that wasn't Destroyer, it did not get the Oscar that we thought that Kidman was going to get. And then after seeing the movie that she deserved.
I think Kusama deserved one too. Like,
yeah,
I think it's a beautifully
sure.
directed movie.
It is.
Just like a left out movie, I think describes Kusama's career. You know, you got Girl Fight in 2000,
yeah.
which kind of got a wide release, but yeah. it was just, it's about a girl boxing. Oh, it's Michelle Rodriguez doing a boxing movie. And at that time, there was a run of boxing movies. It's a lot more than that.
Yeah.
Aeon Flux, which might as well have been an Alan Smithy movie because it changed so much of what that wasn't her cut of Aeon Flux. And then, you
Jennifer's
know,
Body.
Her most widely known movie is... due to the screenplay.
Is a Diablo Cody movie.
Is a Diablo Cody movie. She's kind of overlooked there. And then The Invitation comes out in 2015. Beautifully made movie, amazingly directed. And it took 3 years to get another one to come out for Destroyer. Because I feel like nobody saw Invitation.
Yeah, I mean, she was doing a lot of TV stuff.
Oh, I mean, yeah.
In the meantime. And
she's done,
she
know,
did
Masters
that segment
Sex,
for...
Man in the High Castle, Billions, Halt and Catch Fire. Like, she's... she's done TV stuff.
Yeah, she did that double act, the last story there, like Her Only Remaining Son, I believe is what it was called.
Her Only Living Son.
Yeah. But I got to thinking, what was it about this movie that kept it away? And the only thing I could come back to was just maybe that nobody saw it. They didn't put it in front of anybody in the box office. With $1.5 million, I was thinking, all right, well, what is the lowest grossing movie domestically to receive an Oscar nomination? Which I could probably find, but that would take an incredible amount of time, and I just didn't have the time.
I mean, it depends on what odds, because there was that movie the other year, a couple years ago, that was nominated for Best Song that nobody had heard of, and it turned out like there was a scandal behind like relatives and stuff.
Yeah.
Nobody saw that movie. I'm sure that would, but...
It depends on the award. I was specifically wondering about the acting award, but I couldn't find it. What I could find was the lowest grossing movies to win Best Picture. And can you guess, without looking it up, what is the lowest grossing Best Picture winner of all time?
Would it be?
It wouldn't hurt to guess.
I was
going to
say, was it Hurt Locker?
Movie. It was Hurt
yeah,
Locker.
Yeah, that's the first
right.
one that came to mm-hmm. mind because I don't remember it. And yeah.
$17 million was the domestic gross for Hurt Locker. So I got to thinking.
Which was also a Best Actor movie.
Yeah. Of the top 10 lowest grossing Best Picture winners, 5 have come in the last decade.
Spotlight, The Artist, 12 Years a Slave, Shape of Water.
The top 3. We got Hurt Locker, Moonlight, Birdman. The other two, The Artist and Spotlight, are 5 and 6, respectively. So
12 Years a Slave wouldn't be far behind that. Neither would Shape of Water. Like, these aren't major movies.
No, they're not. But now, specifically in that last decade, the Oscars are skewing towards stuff that people aren't seeing. So again,
which is why they want to have a dumb idea of the most popular movie, which F you expanded because Dark Knight didn't get an Oscar nom, you expanded to 10 films so you could give The Dark Knight an Oscar nom.
And then they don't nominate 10 films.
Then that was, what, 2007? And then 2019, they finally nominate Black Panther as, like, the first popcorn movie that they threw a... I hate the Oscars. I really do. They're dumb, dumb idiots.
It's tough, and we're going to be harping on that throughout the episode. But in terms of Destroyer, really all we have to talk about, we don't really like to go beat by beat for the movies anyway. You've either just watched it. You don't need us to reiterate the plot to you.
Or you haven't seen it, and right. We want you to see it.
Right. In which case, exactly. And this movie specifically is one that if I were trying to get somebody to watch the movie, how do you describe it to them? All right, you start with Kidman's performance. Like, she's phenomenal. So if you want to see a great acting performance, check out the movie. She's a detective. She's on a revenge angle.
Is it a revenge thriller? It checks the boxes.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't describe it as a revenge thriller because it's not what you expect when you think revenge thriller. It's a cop that was undercover 15 years ago, and it's the after effects of that life. That life that she was undercover in is coming back, and it's how does she react? That's about it. That's the easiest way to sum it up. Her undercover past is coming back to her present.
Yeah, and it's, as you would expect, with a movie that spans about 15 years, it's not exactly linear. We get to see Nicole Kidman in her undercover phase.
And oh my God, is she? She's beautiful. Like, she is, like, I rarely talk about that. I try not to in movies, but, like, those undercover scenes when she's, like, younger, I don't know if it's just the contrast because of how she looks regularly,
yeah.
But, like, my God, she's a gorgeous woman. She is beautiful. She has a movie star face. I mean, I'll let you continue your point. She basically plays two roles in this movie. Mm-hmm. There's during undercover, and there's what happens after. And she does both of them really, really well.
And they are two very distinct characters. You see the undercover cop, and that's Nicole Kidman. And then you see her as Detective Bell, and what I love so much
about, she's seen some shit.
She's been through the ringer, and so many times when we're watching, like, either Brad Pitt or Tom Cruise, or, you know, fill in whatever hyper attractive actress, we can't help but see that actor and think about all the other characters they've played before. This is just a character. My brain knows that that's Nicole Kidman. But you're not hung up on that at all. You're just watching.
She's in this, that character.
Yes.
She is. I mean, in a lot of it, she's in makeup a lot.
Yeah.
She is not the beautiful movie star face woman through most of this movie. She's the downtrodden detective who's seen some stuff and it's taken a toll on her. She disappears in this role. Just to go back to, like, the contrast, she mailed in Aquaman. She shows up and gets a paycheck. To see that in this movie came out so close together. Like, how are you just there for one, and then you were one of the best performances I've ever seen in another? And it's, she's so good in both roles, in both the undercover and they're two completely different characters. As the undercover, and it summed up perfectly when Toby Huss, who's like, this is our girl, and her, with our guy, she'll make sense. So she has that vulnerability. She's not the kind of person you would think would be able to infiltrate this gang, but she's there because she's a pretty face and she has the demeanor to do it. So it makes sense for her to be there with Sebastian Stan. And then you cut to her 16, 17, 18 years later. You put her on any job, it's like, yeah, I could see that. That's going to work.
Yeah,
she can handle it. She can handle herself.
That's the person that she was always going to become. And I think Huss is, he's a CIA director or whatever he was.
I think he was FBI. Yeah.
Because he was an FBI agent. I think he knew that about her. I think he got her character right. Maybe she became an exaggerated version of that later, but she is the movie. But there are a couple. You mentioned Sebastian Stan already. He does fine as her partner. And then there's Toby Kebbell. Yeah, who's
Silas or whatever.
Yeah, the leader of the gang that she's ultimately trying to get her revenge on. Bradley Whitford.
My God. Yes. And we talked about this last week we talked about The Martian. The Martian is a Matt Damon movie, but it almost feels like an ensemble because you have all these great actors and you give them something to do. Destroyer, not so much to an extent, because the supporting cast doesn't have a ton to do, but everybody they get brings it. Bradley Whitford is in this movie for 5 minutes, and my God, is he...
It's a good 5 minutes.
Oh, my God. This peak Bradley Whitford. It's one of my favorite Bradley Whitford performances, and it's only 5 minutes. Toby Huss has just a couple scenes.
Elbow!
Yes. Yeah.
Which is complete... It's so strange. It's such a tonal shift in the movie, but...
But it's so good.
It fits that character.
And it fits that character, and I love the dialogue at the end, where it's, you're raising him to be a piece of shit like you, and, like, downtrodden and beaten. He's just like... No, he's a good kid. He realizes who he is. He's very self-aware, but he doesn't want that for his kid. He's this untouchable fucking Michael Cohen type dude. Nothing he does can cause any repercussions until it does. Then that self-awareness is there where it's like he knows that that's not the way to be, and he knows he doesn't want his son to be like that. That one line, that like, it's such a good performance from Whitford to be like that for 5 minutes, and then oh no, he's a good kid. There's so much humanity in just that one line, and in a movie like this it's very easy to create caricatures. But Toby Huss, you know, he's only got a couple scenes, but I talked about in our Drew DeGuire episode how much I love Toby Huss and how that was one of the hardest horror deaths I've ever had, because I love Toby Huss. And even in this, he's just so likable. He knows who she was. He's the guy that puts her undercover. He believes in her. He's seen what she's become. He almost feels responsible for it. Oh, I don't want to get you in trouble. You're always first. If they say something, F them. He's got that loyalty where he knew what she could be, and he wants to do anything he can to help her be that. And then, you know, even Toby Kebbell as this evil guy, he's still human. Like, you get where he's coming from. And Petra, Tatiana Maslany, who we haven't even mentioned yet, she doesn't have any purpose other than
she's
servicing.
She's a means to get to him.
Yeah. And but, I mean, like, in life, like, she's Silas. Her whole purpose in life is servicing Silas. And just Sebastian Stan, yeah, I could fall in love with Sebastian Stan. That's his purpose in the movie. They show up. They're not in there long, but they feel like human moments. The whole scene with Arturo, that's such a tense scene. We've all been at a party to where somebody is being egged on.
Somebody's been asked
not
to
this
play
exact,
Russian roulette.
Yeah, not this exact scenario where somebody's being egged on. And everybody knows that they don't need to do it, but they still do it. And that scene shows how evil Silas is. You have the looks between Stan and Nicole Kidman about, is this where we break? But then just Stan's delivery of like, there were three bullets in that gun. Kebbell's just like, chuckle, and oh, was there? That drives home. There's not a lot of screen time to establish how evil Toby Kebbell is, but she doesn't waste any time just showing how evil he is. And the supporting cast, they have a lot to do, but not a lot of time to do it. And she does that perfect. She gives them enough time to do everything they need to do. I think this is one of the most beautifully paced and edited movies ever. It's almost... not a bottle movie. I don't know. What would you call a time bottle movie? Like, it feels like a 24-hour movie because it feels like it goes from, okay, she wakes up and here's this case, and then it's her through the rest of the day getting to the end of it. It's one of those one-day movies. It's beautifully paced. It does have a sense of urgency to it, but it doesn't rush through anything. She's connecting dot to dot to dot, like one after another, and it feels like a one-day movie. I don't want to spoil the ending, but it's a very... creative kind of twist at the end that I really, really like. And I thought it was beautifully done. Not really a twist. I don't really know how to describe it without spoiling it. And if you haven't seen it, I want you to watch it. So I don't want to spoil it, but it's what she does with time and how she pulls the flashbacks in, and this messing with linear almost storytelling is beautifully done. And at no point does it feel like a gimmick, because you don't even know what that's happening.
Right.
Until it happens.
She's very good at the way she presents things. In The Invitation, we're never really sure if Logan Marshall Green is nuts.
Yeah.
Until we are. And Destroyer, you're never really sure.
Is he back?
Is he back? What is the resolution of this? Yeah. You don't know until you know. And the way she goes about setting up her narrative is really good. We talked about the last shot in Invitation. How you see all the lights going on around the valley, and
what's such a beautiful shot,
what that means for those characters. You know, the ending of Destroyer is similarly visual, but she'll do some stuff. The adult Arturo scene when she chases him down, that scene starts with the baseball game that you hear, and by the time you get to the end of the scene, they're silhouetted against Dodger Stadium. It's just such a beautiful shot.
There's a shot in that chase scene where she comes downhill. She slides like 3 or 4 feet. It just framed. Her movies are beautiful. I said that word a lot during the invitation. She knows how to make a very visually appealing movie. And it's not overly stylistic to where you feel like playing with colors to a point where it's distracting. She's not flashy. It's just beautiful. You're watching this beautiful masterpiece.
It's done easily. This is not like, oh, I'm gonna set up this amazing shot here to show people.
She gives you one of the most beautiful things you've ever seen without telling you. This is one of the, you just realize it.
Right.
And she's not sending out memos or reminders telling you like what you're watching beauty. It's just
watch this.
Yeah, you're watching it and thinking like, this is beauty. She's so good. And that's not just visually, like pacing wise, the performances she gets. We haven't even mentioned Scoop McNairy, mm-hmm. who gets to be the good guy for once. Yeah. Like he's always
not a criminal at all.
He's the everybody craps on Scoop McNairy. That's his career. This is the one where he's the good guy in this. He's over his head. He doesn't know what to do. The dude that plays, when I first watched it, I had just watched a show and the daughter's boyfriend was on that show.
Okay.
So I immediately recognized him. And then watching it, it's like I know him from something. He was on this show called 7 Seconds on Netflix. He played Peter Jablonski or whatever. For what he does in that movie, he's really good.
Yeah.
The daughter, really good. Like
her facial expressions are, I mean, I don't have kids, but I would imagine that's exactly how a teenage daughter acts. And that's why I don't want
kids.
Because
you know what? It's a revenge thriller. It's a redemption story. It's the mother trying to set her daughter straight and put her on the right path. It's an apology movie. It's her trying to make it right with Scoot, with her partner. It's her trying to prove herself to Toby Huss. To him, she has nothing left to prove. Took a chance on her, and it essentially went to shit. In a way, she's viewed it as a failure. Obviously, she lost a lot in the mission, but he never seemed to view it as that. He just wants the best for her. So, I mean, there's a lot going on, and she does it so well, and she comes off as, I almost kind of hate this era that we're in, and we're kind of transitioning out of it now, but for the last, I'd say Breaking Bad, kind of
like the anti-hero
phase, to where we're supposed to be rooting for these people that are the devil, Sons of Anarchy. They're just, these are evil dudes, and we got to a phase where our anti-heroes were just villains. We were getting to where they weren't redeemable at all. And I mean, she kind of has some of those lines where it seems like she's crossing to where like there's nothing redeemable about her until you get to the end and you realize that, oh, there was an end game for all this. Like there was a plan for Scoot the daughter, for the partner, for everything. Like there's a plan in place and it does kind of redeem her. She's not just this cold-hearted bitch that has this mission that she is going to accomplish. There's more to it. And she does a really good job of hiding that. Both Kidman and Kasama do a really good job of hiding that. And you are watching this anti-hero story, and you don't realize how redeemable the character is until the end, but yet you're still rooting for her. Because you know what she's been through. I mean, you have tastes of it.
Yeah.
You don't know full extent until later, but you know she's been through some stuff.
And we get to see that stuff, and we get to see like this fully realized character that is not the heroine that we're used to seeing. And I think that's one of the great things about Kasama is she is not afraid to go dark with her characters, to make you question them, question their motives. She makes the movies now that she wants to make. And I think that's maybe why we don't
see a Kasama movie every year.
Yeah.
Every 2 years.
Right. They're wonderfully well made. I think she's now a director that, you know, after we mentioned Invitation, this, I like Jennifer's Body. She's now a director that I'm going to pay attention to. And if she does something, I'm going to see it. I like the stories that she tells, and I like the way she does it. I don't know that she's ever going to be like a...
Even a Kathryn Bigelow.
Yeah.
I think she should be.
She's every bit as talented.
She should be at a point where if a movie comes out, it's going to get Oscar attention.
Or even like a Spike Lee. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Where like this well-known studio director.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. I don't know that she's ever going to be making super commercial movies, because that's not her.
Because I wouldn't even say like, we use the word accessible a lot, but I don't think her movies are super inaccessible.
No, they're not.
I think they're very accessible if you go into them. And this at the Invitation, you're best going into just not knowing anything.
Yeah.
And but, she delivers.
You know, but now she's starting to build that track record to where, like, you can go into one of her movies and not know anything about it, but you do. You know you're going to get great performances. You know you're going to get characters that aren't just black and white. And she's going to do a hell of a job in building a narrative. She's somebody that I'm very excited to see what she does next. And despite looking, I couldn't find. I don't know.
No, there's no upcoming project.
Yeah, but I don't know what her next thing is.
Not to there's one shot that I can't not mention. One scene, really. When the ink pack explodes, everything about that scene. The camera slows down and it's just pink purple air, her face. They're out.
Yep.
They're free. But because of who we've established Silas to be, we and everybody there knows it's not that simple. Just the tension of that scene, of him just standing there holding the bags for just, it feels like an eternity. Yeah, the camera slows down, but it's, you feel Nicole Kidman. Yeah. You feel Sebastian
Starting
Stan.
Starting with that, you see all the dominoes falling.
Like, you know what's going to happen, and all they have to do is get in and drive away. But it's so beautiful. She uses it to her advantage. Just an ink pack exploding. Slow it down. It's a beautiful thing. You're hiding under that beauty, all this evil. That moment is such a amazing shot, and just how well it's done. I could not mention that scene. I know we're wrapping it up, but I love this movie.
Yeah, that's
I love this movie so much.
A microcosm of her movie. It's beautiful, but there's a lot of darkness under
it. There's a lot going on underneath it. Yeah.
So, I mean, if you took our word for it and ended up watching Invitation after we beseeched you to do so last year, or whatever. I think similarly, if you check this out, if you trusted us with that, trust us again with this one, because I think you'll dig it. It's a movie that's, like we said, it's on Amazon, it's on Hulu, so you can find
it. And it's
it now.
One of those, if you ask me which I like better between Destroyer and Invitation, I don't know that I could answer that. There's two completely different movies.
Yeah.
I don't think I could answer one over the other. I love both of these movies.
Yeah, I'd watch them both again at the drop of a hat.
Yeah,
so.
And I have. I just watched this again a couple months ago. Like, I'm fine. I could have went through without rewatch. I rewatched it last night because I wanted to. I rewatched The Invitation probably twice since we did that episode. So I don't think I could pick. So if you like The Invitation, watch Destroyer. It's a different movie. It's not her hitting those same beats. It's a different movie. But it's very much the same director. Next week, we go to another director.
Speaking of rewatchability.
Yeah. Next week, I don't know. So probably that Rambo movie comes out, Last Blood.
Sounds about right.
So we're doing our favorite Sylvester Stallone movies. So we'll talk about Demolition Man and then four other movies that we've seen.
Rocky 1-4.
Yeah. Next week, we'll do our favorite Sylvester Stallone movies, which I'm interested to see. Because I haven't looked. I know Demolition Man. I haven't really looked. I'm sure there's others I like,
but
we'll see. And I'll tell one of my favorite movie star stories ever is the whole Throw Mama from the Train story with Arnold Schwarzenegger and Sylvester Stallone, which is one of my favorite anecdotes ever. I'll bring that up. But next week, it's our favorite Sly Stallone movies. And then the week after that is our fall preview. We are out of summer. We are into fall. And then after that, it's
October. Yeah.
It is October. So we will kick off our horror movies on up. Plans TBA or TBD.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we have an idea, but nothing concrete yet.
Fleshing it out.
Yeah.
We still got some time.
Stick around for the Sylvester Stallone movie, and then we get into the fall preview through October, and then we end the year, which is usually a lot of fun. So, until then,
keep it up.